So we've now got the tape on. I'm Christine Schimmel and I'm here on Green Oak Road in Topley, and I'm talking to Jean and to Jean and to Pat. It's the 2nd of November 2010. So first of all, because you're sisters, obviously you're going to have memories in common, and you're going to have sequential memories as well, aren't you? You know. Mm-hmm. So can we just start at the beginning to establish, you know, your dates of birth and wonder where you were born? Can we start with you, Pat?
Right, I was born on the 6th of April 1935. I was born in Cannon Hall on Butts Hill, Dotley. I can't remember anything about it. I was too young at the time. My first recollection of anything really is just visiting my grandparents at Avenue Farm. About as early as I go back. Over to you.
Well, my name is... my maiden name as well. My name is Jean Creswick, as was Smithson now. I was born on the 23rd of August 1932, and I was born at Totley Bents. From there, we moved to Holling House. From there, we moved in with my grandparents at Avenue Farm. And from there, we moved to Cannon Hall Farm, where we shared a house with another family. And my sister was born there. She turned up one night while I was at the farm with my grandma. When I came back, I got a little sister.
Who was Pat?
Who was Pat. And we were there until 1936, and then we moved to Main Avenue, where we lived forever.
I think it was 1937, because I was 2 years old when we moved.
No, you were 18 months. It was... you were only toddling. I think... Well, from papers we found when we were doing mums, the mortgage was 1936, yeah. I think. You can block that.
No, it's all right, we keep everything in.
The funny thing is, when I was born, the disputed public footpath that goes from Butts Hill to Baslow Road, my sister went missing. They couldn't find her because she was only little. She sat on the steps at the end of the path, looking at the police box, waiting for a policeman to come out.
Of the little house.
Of his little house. She just thought that's where they had materialised from.
Oh.
And that was the main footpath for people who lived on Butts Hill to go down Baslow Road.
Mm.
And there used to be a sign on what was the toilets that said, public footpath.
Mm.
It was I think it was dark green.
I don't know. The police box is gone now.
But there you
are. The police box.
Yes.
Apparently at the farm, they'd had somebody pinching their hens, and they'd had a policeman to go down, and he was so taken up with the bait, he gave me a penny. So when I went to watch the little police house for another policeman to come out and give me another penny. And of course I sat on the steps, and when they looked from the other end, they couldn't see me.
Because it goes down a hill,
yeah.
Because she's only little.
Oh, goodness.
Mm.
That's a lovely story.
Mm.
So can we go back a bit? So you say another family lived with you at Cannon Hall?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Howarths.
Howarths, that was it.
The Howarths. Eileen Howarth, Derek Howarth. Derek Howarth was the same age as you. And they lived in the front half and we lived in the back half. But
so how did that work?
I suppose it worked quite well, but I don't know.
I mean, Jean's only two and a half and I was newborn, so...
Yes,
I don't know, we...
I mean, many years before that...
We had our own door and everything. We lived at the back.
Years before, our great-grandfather, it was a farm, and he and he did live there, and it was his, and he farmed
there. He farmed
there.
All that land.
All that land.
Around there.
Which isn't there
anymore. And when I talked to Aunt Avis, I did talk to Aunt Avis.
Great Aunt
Avis. Yeah. When Queen Victoria came, I presume, to open Sheffield Town Hall, the family went down to Sheffield to see the Queen, but Aunt Avis, being the youngest, was too little to go. So her dad took her down the fields and watched the royal train go up the line and into the tunnel. And she remembers seeing the train with the royal crest on the front of it as it went to Manchester.
Of course, because it would have come that way, wouldn't it? Through the Totley Tunnel. So, Aunt Avis, how does she fit into the story?
She was Grandad's youngest sister.
My grandfather's youngest sister. She lived to be, what, 104?
104.
And did she live in Totley as well?
She lived at Homesfield, and they farmed at Lidget Farm. And then when her husband died, the landowners made her get out. And Auntie Ida told me that she had to go with her family and live in a wooden hut. And when I relayed this to my dad, he said, yeah, but it was a lovely hut. So I don't know, it was obviously a grand sort of wooden bungalow, I would think. Somewhere at Huddersfield, and I don't know where.
But she remembers it as a wooden hut.
Yeah.
So what was their family name? What was their name then when they lived on the Lidget Farm?
Crawshaw? No. They'll come to me in a minute. Young.
Young.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, her son is George Young. George Creswick Young.
That's okay. I just want to make sure we are recording. So what memories do you have? And you were both very little. I don't know whether you, Pat, have got any memories at all of Cannon Hall, have you?
No, none at all.
Right. But your memories are more must be of Avenue Farm.
Avenue Farm and Main Avenue.
And Main Avenue.
Yes.
So what memories do you have then, Jean, of Cannon Hall?
I remember nasturtiums growing down the path. I remember climbing on the gate and Billy Fisher hitting my fingers with a stick at the other side.
So where did Billy Fisher live?
Next door.
In
you see, Cannon Hall was a farm, and there was sort of like the farmhouse bit with the gable end, and then it went on that way as well. And there were one or two families who lived there. Billy Fisher lived next door. The Gills lived somewhere near,
yeah,
but I don't know quite.
Don't know
where.
Exactly where. I could ask Irving Kelly next time I see him, because he's still around.
But he was probably born there. But so we couldn't have been anywhere very long, because as I say, I was 2 and a half when Anne was born. Pat, that's my daughter. I'm getting mixed up. But Pat was born. And in that 2 and a half years, we lived at Totley Bent's Holiday House, Avenue Farm and Cannon Hall. So we'd never been anywhere very long.
So why were you moving about so much?
No idea.
Well, I think...
Holiday House was because Jessie Tysett sold the field with the house on it. Because that property belonged to her.
Yeah. I suppose we moved to Holiday House because it would be a better house, a bigger... Jessie Tysett, who owned the land, wanted to sell that field and the cottage with vacant possession. So we had to get out. So we went to live at the farm with my grandparents.
At Avenue Farm.
At Avenue Farm. But then, I don't know whether I said, but my mother and my aunt could never get on even in those days. So I suppose they must have been expecting Pat at the time.
Possibly.
And then my dad got this accommodation at Cannon Hall. So we moved again. And then when they built these houses on Main Avenue, it was a brand new house. The road wasn't made or anything when we moved in. And there were fields at the back where Kirby's used to keep their cows.
Yes.
Kirby's was a town head farm, top of Totley.
There's all houses now. Mm.
Yeah.
So what number at Main Avenue?
64.
Mm. And George Kirby used to move his field gate before bonfire night every time, because certain persons who shall remain nameless, but they'll know who they are, used to lift it up and put it on the bonfire.
Yeah, yeah. But we used to have the bonfire in that field gateway every...
Where the entrance to Green Oak Road goes up now.
Where Green Oak Road crosses Main Avenue. Well, this part of Green Oak Road was there, but it finished.
Yes. Just a row of old trees.
Where that horse chestnut tree is there, that was the end of it there. Then that was fields.
Oh.
Down there.
So all down Rowntree was fields. So they were built after these houses were built.
Yeah.
And that's the gate that had to be removed at the bottom there in case it went on the bottom.
And it was like three fields, but the hedges were still there, but they were not total hedges, but the line of the bushes and trees were still across, making it into three fields. But now it was all sort of one, where the cows were. Sometimes there were horses in there, weren't there?
Yeah. We used to collect mushrooms in there.
Yeah, we used to get mushrooms out of there.
And now it's all built on.
And now it's all built on, yeah. But we were told we'd not to go out through the gate, and when they found us in the field, they said, you were told not to go out of the gate.
We didn't.
We went through the fence.
Because there was those, you call it chestnut fencing?
Yeah, yeah.
That stays with twisted wire, because you have a gap.
Mm. Yeah, they weren't straight. When you were very small, you could get through quite easily.
So it sounds as if you had a very free childhood.
We did.
We'd get disappear for hours on the mother's bilberry, blackberry, picnic, you know, paper trails, you name it. Nowadays, unfortunately, you wouldn't dare let a child go missing for a couple of hours on the moors.
Do you mean on Blackamoor and
across there? Yeah, Moss and Blackamoor. Yeah.
And was that usual, or were you an exception?
No,
we all used to play. Oh, yeah. Cowboys and Indians and sledging when it was really deep. And in 1947... I can remember using my grandmother's tray to sit on. Came down because it was so deep, and then it would start to flow and then freeze again, so you got solid ice on top and you could come all the way down.
Which hill was that?
Straight down over Blackamoor and down. It took you ages to get up.
That's a long way, isn't it?
I scratched this tray to the Helen and my grandmother went mad.
We used to go sledging on Wing Hill. And Shepley's Hill.
And
Shepley's Hill. And we all used to go, most of the men were away, weren't they?
Yes.
Our father was in the army for the whole of the war. Mr. Backshaw and Mr. Bustin, they all used to come out and play with us.
Mr. Backshaw, when he wasn't in the Navy, they had a sort of agreement that if one was at home, they would keep their eye on the friend's family and vice versa. So, in fact, on Blitz night, we weren't going to go into it. We'd only got a table shelter, hadn't we?
No, we haven't even got that then.
And he said, no, you're not to stay. You have to go in the shelter. This looks like being a bad one. Well, there used to be the searchlight battery at the bottom here, which is still there. There's still the remains of it. They've filled most of it in. I could take you to it.
Near Shepley's Spitfire, just behind.
Well, further up.
Yeah, further up.
Where White Drive starts, at the bottom of Wing Hill, it's there. And we all went into Bustin's air raid shelter, and it was that crowded. They went and had a look, and there was somebody further down that was away, and we all went in there.
Mm.
And we, the next day, I mean, Blitz night for us, we thought it was like a firework display. We sat there, just, you know.
What date was that?
December 1940, I think. About December the 13th or something like that it was. It was cold.
Was.
Mm.
And we went down to this other one. But you see, we picked up shrapnel because although they were bombing Sheffield, as we're higher, they were really rooftop heights. They came over here and they fired the guns, you see, to try and put the searchlights out. They'd no guns down there. It was just searchlights, as I recall. And so I've got a piece of shrapnel, I'll show you. The weight is only that big, but it weighs, you know.
Mm.
And we collected it and took it to the soldiers at the rifle range.
Mm.
Can you make this back into bullets and bombs and go and kill Hitler, please? Obviously, looking back, they couldn't do a thing with it. But I know they gave us two little tiny squares of chocolate like that. Because we'd done something for the war effort.
So where was Bustin's? Where was that?
There was, you know where Jimmy Caldwell lives now? There.
You know the crossroads? Here.
Yes, just at the bottom of Green Oak and Main Avenue.
Well, yeah.
Bustin's were where this Jimmy Caldwell lives now.
So and on the corner house, there are two houses.
They're sort of Katie Corner. They don't go exactly like that.
Yes.
On a slant.
And that far side.
And it's the one.
Yeah. So they had an air raid shelter in their garden.
Yeah. The air raid shelter went into Mr. Bagshaw's garden first.
Where was he?
And he was the other side.
On the other side of the road.
On the other Katie Corner one.
No, it's straight. This one, Main Avenue.
But
Mr. Bagshaw always sort of looked out for my mother with her being on her own, and he said, you know, you must come into our area shelter. But it filled up with water in his garden.
Yes.
So then they dug it up and put it into Mr. Bustin's garden, which gave Mr. Bustin the right to shelter in it. And on the Blitz night, my mother used to have an air raid case, a metal case, and she used to have her insurance policies and marriage lines and things in it, and earplugs and things for the area. And so Pat used to be rolled up into a blanket and carried out, and I used to have to walk behind carrying the air raid case. And we went off into the shelter, which is now in Mr. Bustin's garden. And I thought Mrs. Shearer was in there. She lived on the other side of the crossroads, next door to John Sykes, if you know where he lives there. She was an old lady. But there was Mr. and Mrs. Bagshaw and Mrs. Bagshaw's mother, and Mr. and Mrs. Bustin, and us three, and Mrs. Wilden, who was another, her husband was in the army. And we were all in this shelter. Of course, there were all these people here, so it was quite nice and warm in there. And then Mr. Bustin was sort of saying, if we get a direct hit, we don't stand a chance with all these people in there, you know, it's much too crowded. But nobody wanted to move. So then they went off and they found the cooks who were down, still on Main Avenue, but before it bent round onto Rowan Tree Dale.
The bottom one.
James,
what are they call him? Solicitor. He was born and bred there.
And anyway, they were away, and he went and had a look, and their shelter was dry.
And empty, I see.
But nobody would move. So in the end, Mrs. Wilden and my mother and us two kids got up and went, and we went into this shelter further down the road, and I've never forgiven those other people for making children, mother and the two kids
cold.
Go out. And because it was dry, and there were bunks in there as well. And I think we were soon asleep because I don't remember a lot more. But I do remember walking down and seeing all the red lights and all the red sky and everything. Because you look down Green Oak Road, and as I say, that was the end of it, and it was fields. There was nothing to block
the
view. Down, and the sky was all red, and then.
So was it the cold that, or were there bombers overhead, or was it the fact that you?
No, it was things on fire in Sheffield,
right.
and the sky was covered in incendiary bombs, and in dot like that, and all red dots right across the sky, like fairy lights hung up, but it was. Bombs falling.
The nearest bomb to us was a bungalow up at Door.
Yeah.
and they were one of the few people with a car. And don't know where they'd been, but I know that, as the saying, people said at the time, they'd come back from wherever, and he'd going into the garage, and just for that split second, he switched his headlights on so he didn't hit the wall. And of course, these bombers over Sheffield circled over to go back for another run. Must have seen it, and they dropped a bomb, and it went straight down the chimney, blew everything out the house, windows, everything, but the actual structure. Mm-hmm. And
it killed their dog. That was the only person. Yeah. That was the only mortal to hit.
Didn't their dog. Was it a maid of theirs that my grandma put up?
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know. I don't remember that.
Because I know we frightened her to death because grandma took her in for a couple of days or something. We put Desi, do you remember Desi, the teddy bear?
Desi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we put that in thinking it'll make her feel safe because she was a foreign person, that's all.
I don't remember that.
And she screamed little murder and we never saw her again.
Mm.
And we put the teddy bear in the bed thinking, you know, she's very frightened this lady, so we thought, lend her our teddy bear. Mm. But of course she pulls the bedclothes back and sees these and must have frightened the hell out of her, you know.
No, I don't remember.
That's all I can remember.
No, I don't remember that. I do remember the Blitz that. And we very shortly after that went down to Bournemouth because our dad was stationed in Bournemouth and the idea was that he was due for some leave. We would go down, have a week with him, and then we would all come back on the train. But it was sort of this Battle of Britain time and his leave kept being put off and being put off and being put off. And I know my mother even tried to get us into school down there. It seemed to me we were there forever, but apparently it was only for about 3 months. But it seemed a long time at the time. And then when we did come home, there was a deep snow and the snow was higher, you know, where people had dug the path out. And the snow was higher than us. Us two kids anyway. Then when we got home, we'd have a burst pipe and the ceiling had come
that
down.
That I do remember.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing the mark on the wall.
Yeah.
Where it had run down.
Yeah.
And I was terrified to go to bed because to me, that was where the top of the water had been. It didn't dawn on me, that's where it had come down. I thought the room had filled up to there. Mm. And I was frightened to death.
Mm. No, the ceiling came.
Brought the corner of the ceiling down.
So were there many air raid shelters then, built in people's gardens around here?
Yeah. If you had a man in the house to dig the hole,
because you had to dig it in yourself.
And mother, with no man in the house, you couldn't have one. Eventually, we did have what they called a Morrison shelter in the house.
Which would have stood no chance.
It was like four strong iron corners with a wire mesh. Thing. I suppose it was
like a mesh, but it had been that thick.
On four sides, which you lifted off.
It was just a thing that
you just dance on the top and used to make a big noise.
It was a stage.
But when you got older and were doing a bit of dressmaking, it was wonderful because you could spread all your material out on top.
So it was always there in the house? You never
Yeah.
You just threw a cloth over it.
We used to have a couple come up from Darnall. They had a fish and chip shop in Darnall. And they used to come up and sleep at our house. I suppose they were like lodgers, really. But they only came at night to sleep because they were afraid of the air raids in Sheffield. And they used to come and sleep at our house. And they slept in the back bedroom. Well, we all slept in this shelter. My mother used to sleep in the middle and we were either side. And then when the sirens went, this Mr. Williams and his wife came down and tried to get into this shelter with us and escorted him off.
I'll give you one funny story about the war. She'll kill me for this, but she'll remember it. In the back room there was a small but very heavy, I think, oak table. Leaves you could pull out. And my mother went upstairs and of course you to be careful with the lights and only so much bath water. When I shout, switch out the light and come up, and we both used to get in the bath. Well, Julie bump, bump, bump on the floor, mother's voice. And Jean pushes me under the table, throws all the cushions in. She gave me, we've got a bottle of Fennings and a pot of Vaseline. Ages later, mother came down, what on earth are you doing under there? And I've got the Vaseline. And she's drinking the Fennings fever cure, or vice versa. And my mother said, didn't you hear me call? Jean said, yes. And what did I say? Put the light out, there's a bomb.
We thought there was a bomb coming.
And she pushed me under the table.
She said, put the light out and come.
so we were sat under the table with cushions round us.
We thought we were safe under the table.
Yeah. So were you were aware of the threat then, obviously, weren't you? Yes. Even though you were very young.
Yeah.
I don't think we realised the full seriousness. Because when my father was on embarkation leave, and Jean was a bit older, so I think she understood more the seriousness of it. I was quite, oh, you know, this will sort it out. To me, your father was God. I said, my father's gone over here. Oh, he'll sort him out. Mm. And to me, nobody would stand up if they knew my father was coming and he was cross. Whoa. Mm. Never had occurred to me there's men with bullets and guns and bombs and they could be killing my dad. Mm. All I could think of was my dad, he's a big strong man. Hitler's got problems. And that's the way I looked at it. Mm.
Was that talked about in the family? Was it? Was
no,
it?
Not really.
No, not really.
We were made to write to him, and mother would draw lines on a postcard or something like that.
We had to write
to him, and of course, writing was such a fag at that age, we used to try and make it feel a good line.
We found a four-leaf clover on what we thought was our island, didn't we? At Avenue Farm again. The river's got a small split before it comes to a waterfall, so it's a mini island. Best blackberries you've ever eaten on there. And there's a patch there that always had four-leaf clovers. So we gave my father one. And we always swore that's why he got back alive from Dunkirk, because when he got back, he got his pants and his vest and the four-leaf clover was in cellophane in the pocket with all the leaves off, but he'd still got it. And that's all he got in his dog tags when he got back.
Yeah. God.
But we were convinced it was our lucky clover that did it.
Mm. So what, let's go back to Avenue Farm, because you've brought Avenue Farm on again. So what memories do you have of living there? I know you were quite young, but...
Well, just saying to Jean, we was... The river where the public footpath goes past the house, the river goes under. And there's a dry bit under the bridge. And my sister and I used to have an apple or something. And we would sit there.
We were always eating apples.
I could hear the couples going over, sweet talking. And we were sat underneath, you know. Because they could see us, we could hear every word.
Yeah.
And in that top corner near that bridge... There's a little pipe sticking out, a spring, and it's the sweetest water I've ever... And we used to fill little, like, milk carton things with a handle on, full of it, and take them up to the men in the fields.
Yeah, when they were haymaking and things like that, they used to take this water up to the men in the fields, because it was so cold.
It's so cold.
Mm. Really sweet. It's still there now, because the people that are not farmers, are they? But there were two rivers, the one that sort of came down, do you know where Fairthorn is up on the hill?
That's the one that came down.
But then there's the Tocky Brook, came down sort of from the moors, and they joined together about there.
So
Joseph Tysack, he had a mill there. There were one or two mills there. You could see the concrete things where the sluice gates and things were. So we used to jump from one to the other.
We used to call that the dam orchard, didn't we? We weren't swearing, it was because it has been a dam.
Yeah.
So it was the dam orchard, that one.
Because they used to put the bull to graze in there sometimes because there wasn't a public footpath, because you weren't allowed to put a bull
where
there was a public footpath in those days. So, but you do now. Yeah. But he didn't then.
So your grandfather lived at Avenue Farm. Yeah. You moved in. So was he a farmer?
Yeah.
And he farmed the land?
Yeah.
And then moved out to Lytton near Tyneside.
Yeah, but that wasn't until about 1947, was it, when he moved there?
But you, it sounds like you weren't there for very long because of the tension between your mother and her sister.
Well, we lived there.
Sister-in-law.
Yeah, my father's sister, But no, we didn't live there for very long. But in the war years, we were always...
At Main Avenue?
We were always... We lived on Main Avenue, but we used to be down there Christmas holidays, school holidays.
Weekends, going up and down.
We were there a lot, but we didn't live there then. In the war years, we didn't live there, but we were there quite a lot.
So do you think the house has changed a lot since? Have they done a lot of renovations to it? Do you remember it very differently?
Well, the avenue.
Oh yes.
Well, it's not a farm anymore. No. Where the car place was, where
they
it's
are
now
executive rooms, cottages,
flats.
What was a pig run, an orchard in the stackyard, that is now a flash bungalow. The main field in front of the house, they put conifers all the way down the drive.
Do you remember the kissing gate at the bottom?
Yeah, we used to wedge that shut.
We just need to talk about that. We used to jam it, we could jam it. There's certain ways you could open it easy. And we used to jam it.
We used to stand on the fence and
say, so we can't get through the... We'll do it, and we used to get a penny because we'd unblock it, because you could easily open it. And we'd sell my grandmother's perennial sweet peas.
Yeah, we used to sell them for the Red Cross, for threepence, a bunch of these sweet peas. We used to have a big enamel bath.
And if people
went... put bunches of sweet peas in it, and then we used...
And if people went past, we sung tweet that they were just... you know, so we used to jam the gate. So while we were jamming the gate, they would buy some sweet peas so they could get money for them.
Through the Red Cross. Yeah, my mother kept the cuttings out of the paper. We found them, didn't we, when we were going through her things. And then we used to sell windfall apples as well sometimes.
We could have a few of them.
I know there's... you know, without Dad being in the army, red caps was a sort of rude word, wasn't it, to the general soldiers, like red caps. It's like saying the coppers are
the army police.
Now, you know.
The police have red
And we'd
caps.
Stand on this fence and this soldier with his red cap came and he said, there's a bull in that field. And he dared go through with call yourself a soldier, you know.
So who was he after, do you think?
Well, he was just after a walk, if you
Because they used to send troops out to train on these moors, you see.
At the rifle range.
Where have we been up on the moors, but having gone from Avenue Farm, we haven't gone up the public footpath, we've gone over the wall. And I don't know, we've been on the moor and we're coming back. And there was one almighty explosion.
Oh, is that quarry,
And it pushed us over the wall. And they were setting landmines off. Yeah, and we've gone right round and we never saw anybody.
It was a quarry and they were blasting for more stone.
Another great storm
One of my cousins was with us in a pram. And they said to us, oh, you can't come down here. And they virtually threw us over this wall and made us shelter down this wall. And then just then, boom, and then all this stone came bouncing all around.
We'd not seen it was closed because we hadn't gone up along the driveway. We'd cut over the fence and gone up.
Yeah. So when was that? How old were you when that happened?
I don't know, around Barry was born about the first year of the war and he'd be about 2 years, he'd be about 1940, 1941, something like that.
Around that time.
I know he was howling his head off, but he always did.
He always did.
So was he your cousin?
Yeah.
On my mother's side, from Tronfield. He was a bit of a sissy, wasn't he, really?
Yeah, he was a bit of a cry baby. He died. He was a young, actually. Well, he was married, but he was only...
He was only early 30s,
wasn't that? Yeah, he wasn't very old. It was a real shock.
Turned out a lot better than what he was as a child.
Well, we used to play at Rounders on Main Avenue, where the crossroads...
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, there wasn't the traffic like there is now. And so that went into a field by the first houses that way, and coming this way, just... Mrs. Kingston lived in the last house. I don't know who lives there now, but where the prefabs used to be, that was all fields there.
There was a road. So there...
With no trees.
On the roundabout, we used to play at Rounders there, and tennis and cricket. And
between my mother's, I crossed Main Avenue, we used to get the washing line, and there'd be about 10 of us.
It was your whole skipping in across the road.
It's very different now, isn't it? I mean, cars whiz down here now, don't they?
I mean, we used to go sledging down Main Avenue till the one next door to where you live, McDonald's, and his daughter, again, only child, very mardy, because she didn't want to join in with the rest of us sledging, he used to come and throw ashes over the track where we used to sledge. The boys used to go and get... You know, you roll a snowball to make a snowman. They used to go and get those, and then they'd all jump on it over the ashes so that we not only could still come, but we got a ramp.
We used to sledge in Tim's fields where it's all houses now.
Yes, that way, where the college was.
Yeah.
We used to sledge in there, and that was Tim's field.
But we always had snow in those winters, not like now where it's a novelty.
Shepley's Hill, that was a good long run. And Wing Hill was faster but shorter. That, no, you couldn't. It's got shrubs all over it. Undergrowth.
Yeah. Because that one, you came down there and then you got to the lane and you used to go bump and then over and then down again to the river.
So there weren't the trees then, were there, obviously, across there? No. It's very shrubby.
The hedges.
Yeah.
Right. Like that.
Yeah.
There were none in the fields. Those fields were good pasture.
Yeah.
It's like the field at the back of Rowntree Dell. It's like a quagmire now because they're filled in the stream when they first built the college.
Mm.
There wasn't a thing. It's not on our plans. As they used to catch tiddlers and sticklebacks in there.
Mm.
Oh, it's not on our plans.
Yeah.
Water finds its own level.
Mm.
And one stream used to go down there. In fact, the people on Rowntree Dell used to keep ducks. Mr. White used to keep ducks down there. And the other stream came down this way. Mm. And that is why the bottom end of the park is wet through. They filled in the stream.
Mm. Used to be a little stone bridge, two great slabs of stone. Because there's the lane that goes up, or the path goes up between the houses. That still goes up there.
Which houses are we on?
On Main Avenue. Do you know where Mr. Parker's farm used to be? It's a stone house.
You know the bottom end of the stone house? Then there's
a stone house. There's a generator thing,
that
isn't
path there?
That path.
That path sort of comes down behind these houses here.
Yes.
And then crosses Main Avenue and goes up and went into those fields there. And there used to be two big stone slabs, natural stone. It wasn't huge stone, went across the stream. But then when they built those houses, they just filled that, they just broke in.
But it still bubbles out there, doesn't it? You get a dreadful icy patch. And the giveaways, it's willows all growing all along there, isn't there?
Yeah, well, that used to be a stream.
Yes.
But when we said, you can't do that, there's a stream. And they said, well, it's not on our map, on our plans.
I feel sorry for those poor people who've got the first garden there because it must be a quagmire in there.
Because it sort of went up under Main Avenue, didn't it? And then came out
this one still does. In fact, the guy who built the bungalow at the back, he found it when he was building that and he piped it past his.
Mm.
Ah.
So it's still there. And my garden, I get a heck of a lot of frogs. Mm.
Yeah.
Yes, and so it goes down and cuts across the bottom of the park.
Cuts into the park.
Where it all comes up at the bottom of the park.
There used to be a lot of trees there, a little wood, didn't it? I think the trees are still there, but it's Where the entrance, the stream used to run through that.
And then eventually down to the river, you see. Mm.
Yes, yes.
Self-draining. The field at the back of there is a quagmire. That was good arable land. It's knee-deep in mud now. Mm.
Mm. At the bottom end of the college field. Yeah.
The back of Rowntree and the one at the back of the council estate there. It's always swampy. Mm. But you see, that stream filled up there. So people, the water wasn't coming through, so they filled it in to extend the gardens. And the water still found its own level. And somebody from door to door was wanting to know where the parish boundary markers were. And there's certain ones they couldn't find. So I rang them up, I said, I know where one is because I unearthed it. As a child, I thought I'd come across such as Long John Silver's tomb or something. In the river, we found this huge stone, like a monolith thing. I thought, this is it. We blocked off and detoured the river and scraped round it. There's writing on it. Mm. We uncovered it, and it was a boundary marker.
Whereabouts was it?
Right on the bend of the river down here.
Down at the bottom of Greenhouse.
So I met these people to take them down to show them where it was. Oh yes, the basic of the stone is there and somebody has chiselled all the face off it.
And smashed
it to pieces. Mm. Now, somewhere amongst those transparencies, my father went down and saw it show up on a photograph. He put chalk in the writing and took a photograph, so it's somewhere. But the other one is in somebody's garden at the top end of Rowntree Dell, because that was the bridle path and then up Hall Lane. Mm. And that's the marker there. That's that marker. There was one which they've now resituated near the co-op on that bit of land. And there's one in a wall about two-thirds of the way up Dover Road.
So the one you can see down on Green, Rowntree. Yeah, and there's one, isn't there? You can see it from the, as you look across from the boggy bit at the bottom of the college field, you can see a post in the garden, can't you? Is that in the right place?
I think it's been moved.
Right.
Because it was this side of what was the bridle path. Mm.
Right. So it was a waymark. Mm.
A boundary.
Parish boundary.
Because this came under Dronfield.
Yes,
John before the church.
Yes.
And that, as I recall, where the council estate is now, originally wasn't that designated as a graveyard? And it never materialised and it was sold to the council.
Because it was in Derbyshire
until... Well, going back far enough, Beechey Abbey was in Derbyshire.
Yes.
Maysbrook was the county boundary.
1935, wasn't it? We were incorporated into Sheffield City.
Yeah.
And then Sheffield wonder why things aren't on their plans. Because it never belonged to them.
No, that's right.
I mean, here, you and I get water from Trent Water. But who do you pay your water rates to? Mm. Mm. And somebody said, you can't do Yorkshire Water. I said, listen, when Sheffield or anybody else grabs a piece of land and said, right, it's now. Those pipes don't think, oh, we don't build there anymore. I said, have you ever seen them do it? And my daughter-in-law works for Trent Water. She said, no, you get your water. We could ask from Derwent and the Lady Bar.
So after the war, was there a big change? Or did it, you know, was...
Well, the biggest change for us was when your dad came back.
Yeah, because we've got a daddy again.
So that we were a quiet household with three ladies in, and suddenly this big man came filling up the place.
What was that like?
Well, we were pleased to see him, weren't we? We were thankful he'd come back home again. But he had to have the best chair and the warmest place at the table. And
that was the way things were done.
But it was...
I can remember... The only time I can remember my father shouting at me, and that's probably why it sticks in my mind, because the war was over, yippee, I thought, that's it, no more news, you see, because we'd only radio, And I can remember the radio being on, and I started to chatter away. Shh, why? It's the news. I said, but the war's over.
Mm.
I couldn't understand why there was still news.
Yeah.
That's how it sounds.
Yeah.
So how old were you when your dad came back?
Well, I was about going up for 14, 13 or 14. I was seven when they went away. But when I was 13, I had jaundice. And I wasn't very well for a long time. And he was still in the army then.
That's when I broke my tooth.
It is, on my 13th birthday, yeah. The thunderstorm, and she came whizzing in and fell.
I'd been next door to ring for a doctor, because if you've got jaundice, I came running back, and it was a stone porch.
Mm.
I hit there, and it took all the back and the corner of that tooth top.
Yeah.
And I went out afterwards and found it.
Yeah.
It was as big as a tooth that was left. Yeah.
So it was... Yeah, I don't know, it was nice to see him back, and then, because we had, when he came back, and we had a car, so we were...
But you must have hardly knew him, did you?
Not really, we'd been made to write to him, we had to write to him, and then he did come home on leave from time to time, but we didn't see him very often.
I can remember him coming home to leave on a motorbike. And we were just going off to Grandma's, and we got up to the top, what was Park Lane, and my dad, top entrance to Sunnyvale as it is now, that used to be called Park Lane.
It was Park Lane,
And I'd got roller skates on,
mm.
and I think it was how the drum starts at you. I said, that's my dad!
Mm.
And I grabbed all the back, and they're pedalling like mad, and I'm holding on to the back with these blessed roller skates, and they weren't like they are now, practically sparks coming off. And they towed me back down.
Mm.
What did they tow you on?
I'd got roller skates, and they got the bicycles. And
you had on
all of the cycles.
Yeah, but he'd come home. He was actually stationed in Ellesmere Port near Liverpool. And he'd sort of had a day off, and time was hanging on his hands, and he thought, I'm going home. Because he was always a keen motorcyclist. And in fact, he was a dispatch rider in the war. And we were going off to Grandma's, and my mother had been singing all day, and we were thinking, and then this motorcyclist coming down and stopped when he saw us. And she says, it's your daddy. And he'd come home, and we had to push the motorbike into the garage and block the window up so that we wouldn't see him. We all walked off down to the farm then, and then sort of tea time, and then he had to get on the bike and go to ride all the way back again to Ellesmere Port. He just sort of absconded, and really, you know,
just for a few hours
to come home.
Oh,
but I mean, before the war, we had a motorbike and sidecar. Mm-hmm. Then we used to go to New Brighton. You will not remember, but we used to go to New Brighton. But what we didn't realise then was that Grandma's family came from Liverpool, and he had all these aunts and cousins in New Brighton.
Just to take a tent.
Yeah, and we used to
a rich tent.
Go to New Brighton. But then, of course, when he got called up, the motorbike was sold and the sidecar. So that was that. So when I don't think he ever... Did he have a motorbike? I think he did have a motorbike when he first came.
It was
back.
A triumph, I remember that.
Yeah.
Because I remember going to Lytton on the pillion.
Mm. Then he got a car, and we had a car, and then he always had cars after that. But it was, you know, we were sort of taken about by a car instead of having to wait for a bus.
Because up till then, the only car we'd been in was Grandad's.
Yeah.
We used to go to Bakewell or Skipton. Because of him trading in cattle and what have, he was allowed petrol, so we used to travel over to him, and then
this
he dropped us in Bakewell, do what he got to do, and we had to be back
there. So we used to wait for him at the top of Tockley, and he would come up Hillford Road and pick us up and then take us to Bakewell.
So we very rarely went to Sheffield. The only time we went to Sheffield
was if he needed a new coat.
No, or if Grandad had needed to go to Wick Falls Corn Merchant, which used to be where the bottom of the moor is now.
Oh,
I've seen a sign for that somewhere, haven't I? Wigfall's Call Merchant.
And you used to go there, yeah. And there used to be a pie tilt shop at the other end of the road.
Cumberland Street, yeah.
To old ladies, to old spinsters.
Oat cakes. They used to make oat cakes. Drop this batter on this hot plate thing.
Yeah.
You just have to wait for them to be cooked. And then cooled off.
Yeah. And you know the little ones you get now?
Yes.
Well, those was the end of the batter that they used, or whatever it was called, the mixture. And if somebody came in with children, they used to give you one of those. Not butter, nothing, just that.
But warm.
But we went to the church school.
Yeah, we did.
And they used to do air raid practice, and if there was an air raid siren go, you all knew what to do. You went into this air raid shelter, which was at the side. Brick built, I mean, it wouldn't have done a damn bit of good. But as you went, they would give you two little tiny inch-wide squares of fries, sandwich, chocolate. Now, I never could and still can't eat dark chocolate. I hate it. And Martin Cowley, he used to live in the bungalow opposite Main Avenue. He was my friend. And as we used to toddle into the thing and sit on these wooden lats, we soon learnt that if it was a false alarm, they'd collect all the chocolate up. So I hated the dark, and I used to, very unhygienic, scrape all the milk chocolate off from the teeth, pass it to him, eat all the dark chocolate and pass it back, and vice versa. I used to share it. Because if it was a false alarm, the teacher would come and, come along, put your chocolate back in the box.
So there were children who didn't eat the chocolate straight away.
Not the finished one. Everybody got wise.
I was never offered any chocolate.
I think it probably was only the little ones.
Yeah. It must have been before, just as you'd started school, and there was an air raid. And because my mother was at the gate to meet her out of school, and the sirens went, and I had to go in the shelter, and I was howling my head off because I wanted to go home with my mother. She was howling her head off because she wanted to go in the air raid shelter, but she'd actually come out of school.
But the teachers then, you had respect for, you weren't fearful of them, in fact you were very fond of them, but you had total respect. I mean, Dillis Cook at the top, she was one of my teachers. And she just got to go. You know? Straight away, she had one of the deadliest aims with a piece of chalk, which would not be allowed these days. But if you weren't paying attention or chattering, if she'd have been in the darts team, she'd have won medals. And if it was a persistent one, and it's a bit one of the boys, the old blackboard cleaners, rubbers, it was like felt on a wooden thing.
Yeah.
If they'd been warned enough times, that would go crack. And you don't tell your parents because they turn around and say, Miss Jones did that, you deserved it.
Yeah.
Not like it is now.
When the scholarship class, as was then, we were moved out. Tokyo was full of evacuees.
Yes.
In the war, people who came from Sheffield get away from the bombing, and so Tokyo school was very, very full, and the scholarship class was moved out into the chapel, Chapel Row. It's a house now, but it was a chapel there, and my last year at Tokyo school was in the chapel.
So we used to have cinematograph shows in there as
So did these children, these evacuees, did they live with families in Tokyo?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the family from Darnell that went home?
No.
They actually came and stayed.
Especially if they had relations, you know, that they would come and stay with
them. Even people that had TB, they used to send them up here, didn't they? Because of the air off the walls.
But I was talking to a lady a few weeks back now, and she said, oh, you come from Totley. She said, I was evacuated to Totley.
Yeah.
And she stayed at Hills Farm.
Ah.
And I didn't remember her, but I remembered the people she was talking about.
And of course, Cherry Tree Orphanage, as it was then.
Yeah, was packed with
children.
That had come from Sheffield.
Yeah.
Well, all over, really.
Yeah.
So they weren't just orphans, were they?
No,
they were actually homeless or all sorts, various reasons. But you never asked.
No.
They were just there, and they were schoolmates, and therefore you looked after your schoolmates.
And they always walked down to school. They didn't stay for school dinners. No. They walked down in the morning,
down that path
at lunchtime, and then walked back again for the afternoon school, and then they would walk back again.
So where would they walk from Cherry Tree? Down Mickley?
Down the path. No, there's a path from Strawberry Field.
Ah, the crop.
Where they're talking about having allotments now.
Cross the bridge by the Scout Hut. Mm. And then, of course, up through the fields to the main road.
Mm.
And along the public footpath to Butts Hill onto the school.
Yeah.
They all used to go that way.
In a long line, do you think? Or?
Yeah.
Well, the big ones would obviously be a group.
The boys were all put into the Navy and the girls were put into nursing. You know, because then they had a home.
If they were old enough, yeah.
Because, you know, they couldn't keep them indefinitely.
No.
At the orphanage.
But it was always... And there was never any real trouble with them or anything,
no,
was there?
No.
So your classes were very full, and you've got lots of
I mean, we talk now, a class is, a teacher can't cope with the 30 people. There were 40 of them in the class.
Yeah, there were always about 40.
But you were always well under control.
In Totley School then, that main hall, I mean, it's all different now.
Yeah.
I mean, the last time I went into Totley School,
I didn't recognise it.
This is the church school.
Yeah,
this is the church.
I remember that archway doorway, which was still there, but it seemed to be fenced off somewhere. But there was just the main hall, and then there were just two like movable partitions in the middle.
In the middle.
Mm. And there was one class one side, and one class the other side. And I suppose really the teacher would have had to have had a really strong voice for it to have carried from that end right to the other end. But the piano used to be in the middle. In assembly time in the morning, these two partitions were moved back.
Yeah.
And the whole school went in for assemblies, and then these two partitions were put back across the middle.
Do you remember that concert?
When you were laughing at Mrs. Finney singing Cherry, right? Yeah.
Mrs. Peacock, she was the teacher, and she was telling me about that, and she says, I must admit, I couldn't blame the child. She says, I was in a joke myself. And one of these ladies came, and she was rather a
booksome
lady.
Where had she come from?
She was Marston
Crescent. She was somebody's mother. And she considered herself like an opera singer.
Oh, so it's a concert.
And she came, and we're all sat there, you know, waiting. And the kids aren't interested in that. And this woman stands up, Janet Street's mother it was, and she stood there, his huge bosom heaving, going redder and redder. And Cherry Ripe,
never been able to listen to Cherry Ripe ever since.
Because
parents were there, because my mother was there, and she was sending daggers at you, but she wouldn't shut up.
Then once she started laughing, and I could see Mrs. Peacock come to us and go, and Mrs. Peacock's trying to look stern and say, shh, shh, like this. Apparently she was nearly creasing herself as well. But if ever I hear that Cherry Ripe,
it takes you back to that.
I can picture this woman in this really lurid dress.
I couldn't tell you what she was.
And this red bosom heaving up and her face going redder as she reached the high notes. And I just absolutely, and I lost it. And my mother never let me forget that.
No.
Oh,
I think they took you after Totley School shortly after that. She went to Cardinal when she was.
And Vernon Mather, I think it was, he was stood with a Punch and Judy outfit. And he was doing this monologue about having to take his eggs to market for his father or something. And all I can remember is him standing there looking up and saying, come on, Punch. Come on, Judy. Eat my father's eggs. He wasn't all the eggs.
Yeah.
And that was the only bit of it I can remember.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Different things that come into you. Yeah. And there was a headmaster came that upset everybody because we'd had Miss Cole. And of course, as soon as the war was over, the men were always given priority to the jobs, so she was outed. And this Meller, Mr. Meller, came in, and he used to sign himself S. Meller. Yeah. Well, you can imagine what we all called him. Mm. Not a very nice person at all.
He wasn't a nice man.
Really, not nice. And Miss Cole had been very fair, but very straight.
She was a good teacher.
She was a jolly
good
teacher.
She was a retired headmistress, and she got...
came back.
You know, when the men were all called up, she'd been sort of sought out, you know, to fill in. She was a really, really good teacher. And she had to class of us in the chapel. And...
So you were the older ones?
Yeah. Well, 10.
10 and 11, they were the big ones.
Yeah, was the 11, you know, there for the 11 plus exam as was then. And so that was it after that.
So after the war then, the evacuees obviously went back.
Well, they just
went, yeah. Mm. I mean, you'd left school anyway. I mean, I'd still gone to secondary school.
Yeah. There were still some people up at the orphanage, but not as many. Yeah. But there were, I think they were orphans or deprived children at that time, you know.
I think sometimes if there was a mother missing, you know, the children would be in the orphanage because the father was either called up or at work and couldn't look after the children, so they were in there. But they were very happy there.
They were looked after. It was like a huge family. They were really, it wasn't just like an institution.
Mm. I know,
they,
I went
they
once.
They cared.
Because, there was a girl at school who was there, and I went, and, you know, we'd never had toys like they'd got there.
No?
Can you remember her name?
The child, she was Doreen Hamilton.
I'm going to say Doreen.
Either Hamilton or Hamilton.
Hamilton, I think it was.
Doreen Hamilton, and Miss Stiles was the
principal
matron or whatever she was. And are you going to ask your friend to come and have a look round and show you all round and where they slept and anything? Room to yourself, you know. Well, it wasn't a room to themselves, but a bed to themselves. Mm. Anyway. But they were very happy there. And Miss Stiles, she was a nice lady, you know, and she used to bring them to school sometimes. When they started school, you know, she would
come with them.
And,
But she was of the old school, like Miss Cole. They were teachers and carers because it was a vocation, not a profession.
Mm.
They'd gone into it because they cared, not as a career.
Mm.
I mean, teaching at one time, it was your local doctor or vicar's youngest daughter that went into that.
Mm.
I mean, old Miss Marsden, she taught my dad, she taught my sisters, she taught me. Always was a miss.
Mm.
Very strict, but scrupulously fair. But again, it was a vocation, not a profession.
Mm. I think you had to leave, didn't you? If you got married, you had to leave.
I'm not sure. Well, Miss Marsden used to live just past the top
indoor.
Of Old Hay Lane, at the top of that big house, opposite the bungalow.
I think in the wartime, they were glad of you, whether you were married or what, because we had Miss Saxon, and I used to be frightened to death of Miss Saxon. And then later on, I went into her class again. She moved, but by this time she was Mrs. Wilson, and she was a different person, and she was lovely.
Mm.
And I remember her taking us on a walk. We went to Beachy Fabby, and we walked to Beachy Fabby, and that was about the furthest I'd ever. Well, we used to walk to Drogheda regularly, but to my granny's. So we were used to walking a long way. So she walked us
up
to
the field,
Beachy Fabby.
Over Mickley. Across Drogheda Woodhouse and down.
But she was always going to take
us
to see the remains of Sheffield Castle.
Mm.
But because with the war situation, you don't you don't take children that far away from home. So we never, well, I did get to see it, but I was a married woman by the time I got to see it, because all it is a bit of masonry now, and you could fit it in that corner there, yeah, that's left. But I have seen it. But Miss Saxon was, or Mrs. Wilson, as she became, she was always going to take us to show us the remains of Sheffield Castle, but we never did go because, you know, the war and the bombing and everything, you don't go all that
way.
Do you
know, there's all, we used to go on nature walks every week, didn't we, when the weather held. And when he came back, you not only got spelling and writing, because you had to write what you'd seen, you collected as many flowers or leaves, whatever it was, the project for the day. You then had to draw them, so that was the art, and you'd colour them, and you'd got to kind of identify each one. So you got an awful lot of lessons all from that one nature walk.
So it sounds as if, although you were doing nature walks, you were quite confined to Totley and the very
Yes.
local area.
Yes. Yeah.
So you used to walk to Drumfield to your granny's,
my mother's mother.
Every week we did, didn't we?
I think the only exception was when we used to get to Door Station and catch the train, and then we'd walk from
Door Station,
which
is 2 miles away. It's only 4 miles to Drumfield, so you might as well walk the whole way.
So how old were you when you were doing that walk, do you think?
We did it forever.
I can't ever remember not doing it, to be honest.
So you go up Mickley Lane?
Yeah.
And then over the fields.
There used to be a house at the top that's been pulled down, and they got into trouble for that because they didn't have planning permission. But we used to call it the castle.
Which had all this balustrade in
like
around a bit.
Turrets. So we used to get to the castle and you'd
go
across the field.
Across the fields.
And
it
comes
brought you out by the Talbot Arms and Carl Inn, which, I mean, the Talbot Arms is not where it was. The Talbot Arms is there now. It's
a new
place. The original one is sort of further up the road. It used to come out in a little cutting through, and then we'd walk down Stubley Hollow. And then onto
Sheffield
Road. We did it regularly.
Every week, didn't we?
Yeah. And so, sometimes in the winter we would come back on the train.
Yeah.
Or sometimes we would go on the train.
If it was really bad weather.
Yeah, but
because it cost money, you see.
Mostly we would walk it. We were quite used to it. But I mean, we had an aunt who lived at Holmesfield. We used to walk up there.
Yeah.
And then we used to walk to the avenue two or three times a week, Avenue Farm.
And I know what I do remember is walking from Avenue Farm up to Dart and standing outside where they bake the bread. And they got a coffee machine after. Used to stand there, it was worth 6 months to smell it.
Yeah, that's another thing, that with the civil defence or whatever they called it in those days. And during the war, my mother's big fear was a parachutist dropping. And she wouldn't. I mean, she was afraid of the bombs. It would be silly to say nobody was afraid of the bombs, because you were. But you sort of took it in your stride a bit.
You kind of, it's going to be quick.
But if parachutes drop, I mean, there were all fields at the back of us, and we'd been down to the farm, and we were just coming home. Just as we were walking on, I mean, there were no trees on that first bit in those days. Walking on, just dropping out the sky and going down a parachute. Well, my brother grabbed us one each hand, and we flew back to the farm. And my granddad phoned up the police and said we'd seen this parachute dropping. And it was a civil defence exhibition on Dore Village Green. And they knew about it. But I know the fear in my mother's face there. And then we just flew back to the farm.
What I can remember, and you'll probably remember this, they were fanatical about chinks of light. So even if you got thick blackout curtains, you had tape around the edge of the window so there was nothing showing.
Mm-hmm.
Bang, bang, bang at the door one night, Main Avenue. You were showing a light, sorted out this little puffed up little ARP chap.
Was that Mr. Chadwick?
I don't know who it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just showing a light. don't you realise how dangerous? She says, of course I know how dangerous it is. My husband's out fighting for his country. He says, well, I'm authorised to... And he was getting very bombastic. Show me. They walked round to the front. She says, I can't see any light. And he bent down with his head about that far off the floor.
Mm.
There. And then they said, how many planes are going to fly a foot off the ground to have a look up? Because it's not showing any light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's still a light. It's still a light.
She said, good Lord, is Hitler going to come on his hands and knees?
She said, that all you've got to do?
So were the ARP, were they local people?
Air raid warden precautions, yeah. Mm. If you watch Dad's Army.
Was it like that?
Yeah, just like that. Yeah. And the ARP, don't know, Mr. Chadwick was ARP warden. But he was the one who suggested that all the houses club together and bought a ladder.
Yes.
Because he said, if you do get a hit and the house gets on fire, no one's got a ladder, we can't get you out. So we chipped in and bought this ladder. And of course after the war, it was used for painting and decorating, and everybody wanted the use of the ladder. But it was before my dad came back. And this man, Mr. Parker, he came and he said, you've got the ladder, can I borrow it? And I said, we've not got the ladder. He says, well, so-and-so says you've got the ladder. So she says, I'm telling you, there isn't... Well, he says, I'll just go round the back and have a look. So she says, well, I'm not going round the back of my house. And we sort of go on long meeting, you know.
But she wouldn't. She just stuck it out.
She just stuck it out. She wouldn't let him go round the back. We had not got the ladder. Somebody
she
else
said,
had.
I am
but
not.
But it's just that he didn't believe her. Anyway,
wow, so she was in check.
Yeah.
You will not.
Oh, yes.
But I'll never forget that chink of light.
Mm.
How are they going to fly down there?
Mm.
I mean, the gatepost were this high.
Yeah.
And he got his head about 10 inches off the floor saying, look, I can see it up there.
And we used to sit on the gatepost, one on each one, didn't we?
Yeah. So there was Mr. Chadwick.
Yeah, Mr. Chadwick. He lived next door but one. He was an ARP warden.
So was there some reason why he wasn't in the forces? He
probably was too old. I don't.
Well, there were some that weren't in because of
Mr. Fish.
Restricted jobs. Mm. Others because of certain disabilities.
Mm.
And, of course, some that just conscientious objectors.
Yeah.
Which, if they had to do so many turns at the farm... By job, my grandmother made him work like slaves because she says, my son can be fighting for his country, probably giving his life. You're damn well going to give some sweat.
Mm.
What would you, a big woman?
Yeah, she was.
So people were brought in then to work, to replace the men, the work on the land?
Well, they had to do, if they weren't in one of the armed forces or munitions, they had to do so many hours a week in the making bombs, bullets or whatever, I don't know what they were doing, or so many hours on the land per week. And I know Grandma had Miss... Was it Mr. Marshall? No.
Where
at the farm. He was a little fella. He was a teacher.
Mr. Morgan?
Morgan. I knew it became the name.
Yeah.
He was only a little guy.
Yeah.
And he was a teacher.
No,
but he was a conscientious objector as well.
Well, I don't know. He went to the Air Force eventually.
Eventually, yes, I think... It was probably because my grandma breathed down his neck.
Mm.
But he's a pleasant little fella. But if they had to do the work, she says, no, if my son could be shedding blood, you're going to shed sweat.
No. The story about Mr. Morgan, he was a very mild-mannered man.
He was.
And Mr. Perkington, who went to the post office at the top of Top
John's Bay, father.
Yeah. He was selling bags of sweets with a swastika on.
He used to make bags out of twisting paper and he'd draw on swastikas on.
And Mr. Morgan very bravely said to him, I really don't think this is proper. We are at war with Germany and I don't think you should be selling these bags of sweets with a swastika on. Well, I don't know how the conversation went on from there, but evidently it went downhill. Well, Mr. Morgan had the cottage at the side of Avenue Farm there, and he was getting his coal in one morning, and Mr. Perkington used to come round delivering the papers. Well, Grandma got Auntie May, they were staying there because of the bombing in Liverpool, and Auntie May was Grandma's cousin, and she was there, and she comes out and she sees Mr. Perkington getting Mr. Morgan and going to give him some fist.
Because he'd not marry a man who was smaller than Mr. Perkington.
Yeah.
And he'd found one.
But Auntie Mary was a big, hefty woman. She got Mr. Perkington.
She just picked him up.
And gave him the bum's rush out of the gate. And slung him out.
As I recall, the phrase used was, "Why don't you take on a defenceless woman, you coward?" And she was built like a house. Defenceless.
But it was all because of this.
Because of the swastika. You drawn them on. Yes. You know, you used to use a square paper like that.
Why would
you twist it like that?
I don't know. But there was never enough money to spare the tag house, so we didn't have anything like that. He used to sell all sorts of things. He used to buy a penny carrot from him and then find it was a rotten carrot when you got it. You know, and you'd pay, so all the mothers used to be eating up and out.
It wasn't a bit like Johnny's.
Another time he was selling chocolate to the children going to school, and it was chocolate laxatives.
It was, yeah.
So, of course, all the mothers...
Anything that turned a bulk, you know.
Yeah.
And he used to have a little car.
That was after the war, and he used to lift the boards up.
Because he'd not catch it, he'd lift the boards up and freewheel down. And then you'd see him coming back and speak to you.
When he delivered the newspapers, he had a bicycle, like a butcher's bike, with a basket on the front with all the papers in.
That's quite a character.
He was a character, yeah.
And the roof, the ceiling in the shop, I can see it now, there were camels.
And pyramids, all painted. Advertising dates. And there were all camels and pyramids. And over the city.
Had he painted them?
No.
How had they got there?
Well, I suppose somebody must have painted them.
John's mother was very nice, but his daddy was a weaselly little carrot. Mm. He wasn't very nice. Mm. But his mum was nice. John carries after his mum.
Yeah, he looks like her as well. Yeah, but his father was a real character. Yeah. Old Perky, we used to call him.
Yeah. He called him Perky.
Mm. Yeah.
I never met anybody that had got a good word for him.
He used to sell these, it was supposed to be chewing them, I think, and it looked like two red lips. And you could bite the bit in between, so it looked as though you'd got two big red lips. Oh, and everybody had these, and I coveted these red lips. I would have loved to have had some of these red lips. I never did get any. They used to have a cinematograph show in the chapel on a Saturday night, wasn't it? And it was threepence. So we were given threepence each, and then we got there one night, and there was a storm. Oh, there was a storm. There was no film show that night. So instead of going home with the threepence, we went into Perky's shop and bought a toffee or something with it, and boy did we get walloped for spending that. We both got walloped that day, but for spending the threepence, you know, because... But we didn't realise then how much that threepence was worth.
What mother has had to go without to get it to us. Mm. It's only later that you look back and think, how did she cope? It was incredibly difficult. Yeah. How many meals did she go without to make sure? We never went without a meal.
We never went out without anything.
Or a bath or anything.
Mm.
So it makes you wonder, looking back, how much she went without sacrifices. But the cinematograph show at the chapel, there was one almighty storm one night.
Yeah.
Real thunder and lightning torrential.
And cloudbursts.
And we had...
It had been a boiling hot day. We were all sat there in our swimming costume. The lane was flooded.
Now, you wouldn't think it could flood now, because it's down and then down to...
But it
dipped. And it was about 3 foot deep. We couldn't get out. Mm. So we were having to go... Round the back of the houses then through their back gardens and be lifted over the fences.
The men who worked on the bins, and they must have all been older. Yeah. Older men who worked on the bins, and they were there lifting us over the hedges.
So was the main entrance then at the back?
No,
at the front.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
But the lane was flooded. We couldn't get out. So we had to climb around the back, and then each time we came to a wall or a fence, these men would lift us over, and then the next one, till we got to the end of the school. By the school, then we could come back.
But it had been a really hot day, and we were all sat there. Can you imagine now, sort of going to the pictures, and we were all sat there in our bathing costumes, because it was in that summer,
And I mean, the bathing costumes back then
The thunderstorm was going on, and he was showing us another film, and the thunderstorm went on, so he put another one on, and it was all about Popeye and Mickey Mouse and things like that. And
after about the third time of showing, you were getting a bit fed up. Mm-hmm. And it obviously wasn't easing off, so they said, well, that's it. But there's no way you can get along the path.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so why that's
all these men came and lifted us over all these fences and hedges at the back. Yeah, I remember that.
I think that's a good place to stop.
Gosh,
Looks like it's raining.